Les colloques du Collège de France.
All right, sorry for this little delay. Now we have as the last speaker for today Aidan Gray from Chicago for a talk entitled Externalism, Transparency and the Intransitivity of Coordination. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your patience and thanks to the organizers for helping me out there. I apologize for that. So that there's no handout for the talk. That link will take you to a PDF of the slides in case you want to go back and look at anything or go ahead. It's also just written there. It's only on the first slide. So if you find anything you want to go back and look at, it's there. Give me 1 second. It's written here too. Okay, so talk today is about two questions and their relation. So the first question is coordination transitive? Roughly, that's the question. If it's transparent that representations X and Y co-refer, and transparent that representations Y and Z co-refer, must it be transparent that representations X and Z co-refer? Question. Sub-questions, if it is that a matter of empirical regularity about representers like us? Or is it a matter of some sort of deep necessity for any representational system? Sort of flip side to that question, is an intransitive notion of coordination even really intelligible? That's a set of questions I've been thinking a lot about from different directions. Another question for today is, what features of mental states are shared by qualitative duplicates? So that's a question about externalism. And in particular here, the question is, if we're externalists about reference, what follows about coordination? Do we have to be externalists about coordination too? Okay, so those are, I think, interesting questions in their own right, but also I think there's a sort of interesting relationship between those two questions, so that's what I'm going to explore today. So here's the plan. So in the first section, I'm going to introduce this technical term coordination and explain how I understand the sort of traditional account of it. In the second part, I'm going to introduce this challenge from slow switching, and in particular try to show how the assumption that coordination is transitive plays a role in shaping the space of possible responses to that challenge. And the third part, I'm going to introduce, sort of sketch an account of coordination as an intransitive relation, and then finally I'm going to apply that to the slow switching case and see what that allows us to say about the slow switching case. All right, so first section is the traditional account of coordination. So let's start with a very familiar contrast. So think of these boxes as representing belief states, as the belief state I would be in if I could express, I could express with those two sentences. Dylan is a musician, Dylan is from Minnesota. There's the belief state I could be in with those two sentences that I would express with those two sentences. And in both cases I have co-referential beliefs, but they're different belief states. And there are various differences you might want to point out between them. And as we've seen, the various differences you might want to point out in terms of using the notion of transparency. So one difference is one that I think of as a sort of meta-representational or metacognitive difference, which is that in the first state, it's sort of available to me a priori that I'm thinking about the same object in both beliefs, but that's not true in the second state. So I'm thinking of that as metacognitive or meta-representational in the sense that it's about the availability of a bit of knowledge about my own mental states. So some people call that access transparency. That's what Michael calls it in his recent paper. That's not the kind of transparency that I'm interested in for today, although it's related, I assume. I'm interested in what I take to be a first order representational phenomenon, so not a metacognitive or meta-representational phenomenon. I'm interested in representational features of attitudes, and in particular, those that contribute to the determination of rational relations between attitude states. So for example, from that attitude state, it would be rational for me to infer that some musicians from Minnesota, and from this attitude state, it wouldn't be. That's an example of the kind of difference I'm interested in. Okay, so I'm going to follow Kit Fine by introducing the technical term coordination for this relation. It's present in one case and absent in the other. And as a real rough first gloss, I'll say coordination is co-reference that's primitively visible to rationalizing explanation and rational evaluation. All right, so several notes about this. First, obviously, I don't intend this to be a definition of anything. It's quite hand-wavy. It's just supposed to be directing our attention to a certain representational phenomenon that we can then theorize about, hopefully. And again, you know, just to reiterate, I'm thinking of this as a first-order representational phenomenon. The appeal to primitiveness here, right, the coreference that's primitively visible, is supposed to indicate that this coreference is rationally relevant, and it's being rationally relevant is not in virtue of an explicit representation of identity. Right? So it's rationally relevant and not because there's some representation of identity of the form x equals y. So that's the primitive, what I mean by primitively rationally relevant. I mean, so just to situate things a little bit, I mean, maybe this will help you to see, it's the relation, coordination is the relation that Phrygians call sameness of sense, and some non-Phrygians call sameness of concept or sameness of guise. But I don't want to start thinking of it that way, because if I start thinking of it as sameness of anything, that just assumes it's a transitive relation. So I'm not, that's why I'm not just talking about sameness of sense. But that relation. Right, not in virtue of representation of identity. It's this appeal to rational explanation, rationalizing explanation and rational evaluations. I'm not going to offer you an account of what rationality is, but I'll just mention that at least, and we'll see that, you know, some of the issues here turn on whether or not certain things can be said of rationality. But at least as a starting point, the kind of rationality that's at issue here seems to be structural rationality. So it has to do with what inferences are licensed and what states are incompatible with which. Right, that's the starting point. And then finally, I don't even want to take too seriously the idea that it's a kind of co-reference. Right? That's the way I'm initially introducing it, because many people think that the relevant relation can hold between representations that are vacuous, don't refer at all. So I want to leave that open. Maybe the kind of paradigm case involves a kind of co-reference, but I want to leave open that it's possible this, whatever this relation is, it might hold between non-referring expressions. Okay, let's see. All right, so I'm going to give an account of, or an account, I'm going to give a characterization of what I take to be the traditional account of coordination, and for the sake of concreteness, I'm going to focus on like Phrygian accounts, but actually, I think almost nothing I say is sort of that importantly tied to the Phrygian picture. It would equally apply to people who talk in terms of the language of thought, or guises or concepts, or whatever. I'm going to, just for the sake of concreteness, focus on Phrygian versions of this idea. I'm going to characterize the Phrygian account in a kind of unusual way, because if I just start talking about sameness of sense and kind of don't say anything more, again, that just makes it look like the transitivity of coordination is hardwired in at a really fundamental level to our thinking about it. What I would prefer to do is try to characterize the traditional account of coordination that locates the transitivity of coordination as something like a parameter that can be tweaked. So I need to think of the traditional account in a more abstract way to locate a parameter that then can be tweaked so we get a potentially intransitive relation. Okay, so let's, you know, the Phrygian says, you know, this is a rational inference from that belief state to that belief, and, you know, it's rational because there's, you know, the two representations of Dylan are presented via the same sense, and it's, you know, reasonable to ask, why is that good? Like, what's, you know, why does that make it a rational inference? Here's the kind of thing that a Phrygian might say. This is something that Campbell says. Campbell's a Phrygian. Validity of the type which concerns us requires that it should be the same thing that guarantees that necessarily, if the premises are true, so too is the conclusion, as makes obvious that the transition is correct. This requires that sameness of sense should guarantee and make manifest sameness of reference. Okay, so, I mean, obviously Campbell's a Phrygian, so sameness of sense gets mentioned here as a story about why this is a rational inference, but it gets mentioned as securing something else that's important, right? What it secures is a kind of guarantee of co-reference, a particular kind of guarantee of co-reference. Right? So the story we get is like recurrence of sense matters rationally because sameness of sense guarantees and makes manifest sameness of reference, and sameness of reference guarantees certain patterns of truth preservation. That's the story we get from the Phrygian. Okay, so I'm going to extract three ideas from this. Again, none of them mention senses, right? So I'm trying to work at a more abstract level. So the first idea is that coordination essentially is co-reference that's guaranteed by meaning. Right? So that's the crucial idea here, that What coordination is a certain way that the meaning of or the sort of representational features of your attitudes could guarantee that that two of them are about the same thing. And when we talk of a subject's grasping a sense, when the Phrygian talks about a subject's grasping a sense, that's a way of asserting that whenever this kind of guarantee is present, this is transparent to the subject. By that I mean, I'm not going to use the word transparent. By that I mean something like, when this guarantee holds, subjects are as such rationally evaluable with respect to it. So whatever this kind of guarantee in virtue of meaning is, if it holds, then as such, subjects are rationally evaluable with respect to that guarantee. I'll say a little bit more about what that means. And then the last idea I'm going to take out of this Campbell quote is, I'd say much more implicit in it, but I think it's there, which is that in relation to coordination, first-order logic models truth preservation in virtue of guaranteed coreference. So obviously, it's deeply embedded in Campbell, but I think it's there. So how does first-order logic, or logic at all, get into this? Say something about that. So I take it there's a substantive question for the Phrygian or for anybody else. How do patterns of sameness and difference of sense induce rational relations, relations of incompatibility and entailment between attitudes? What kind of systematic story can we give of that? And to the extent that the Phrygian gives us this systematic answer, I think we're just supposed to think of sort of classical first-order logic as providing a model of this. Sometimes that's done pretty explicitly by Phrygians, but other times more implicitly. But I think Phrygians essentially are thinking of, like, this is the inference that we said was a rational inference, and, we can kind of model its rationality with this, very simple entailment in a first-order language, right? So where we have sameness of sense and the attitudes, we model that with sameness of constant, and then, we get this very simple model. Similarly, where we have this lack of entailment, this irrational inference is modeled by this lack of entailment, where now we have different constants. And so we get a lack of entailment in the first-order language. And so I want to pause a little bit to say something about how I want to understand this kind of modeling relation. Because there's a certain kind of flat-footed way of taking it that goes along with like the normal way of thinking about the Phrygian picture that I want to get away from. I mean, this is not wrong, but it's, I think, maybe not the deepest thing, which is you can just think of this modeling like this. We have some fact in the world we're interested in understanding. That's truth preservation in virtue of recurrence of sense. And the thing in the model that's modeling that is preservation of the value t in some form of language in virtue of recurrence of constants. Maybe the first thing you'd think if you tried to understand how this modeling relationship works. And again, that's not wrong, but I think it's a little bit flat-footed in the sense that, again, it's sort of working in this mode where we're just thinking of recurrence of something as the fundamental part of the Phrygian story, right? And that's, again, if we're starting with there, then that's just going to impose transitivity at a very deep level in our thinking about the traditional picture. And I don't want to do that, so I want to encourage us to think of this modeling as I'm encouraging us to think of the Phrygian account in a slightly more abstract way. We want to think of this modeling in a slightly more abstract way, which is, well, so start with this question. What is it about the syntactic relation between two occurrences of the same token in the first order language that is relevant to this, the contrast between these two entailments? I mean, the answer is obvious, which is we've designed the language such that two occurrences of the same constant co-refer relative to every interpretation of the language, every admissible interpretation of the language, where that's not the case for occurrences of distinct constants, right? So that is a kind of modal relational fact, right? It's a relational fact about two occurrences of the same constant in the formal language that they co-refer relative to every interpretation, right? And so that is essentially, I'm encouraging us to think of that as being what's modeling the relational fact about the attitudes, that there's this guarantee of coreference in virtue of meaning. So that's all to say that, right, way we should think of this more abstract way, we should think of truth preservation in virtue of guaranteed coreference, which is the thing that's going on in my attitudes, as modeled by preservation of the value t in virtue of the requirement of co-assignment. But requirement of co-assignment, I just mean that fact about the formal language that in every admissible interpretation of this language, two occurrences of the same constant are assigned the same object in the domain. Okay,
Now, I suspect this is all seeming like unnecessarily uptight, obtuse. But I need to develop a way of understanding the role that the formal systems are playing, because I want to use the same strategy later on when I develop an intransitive picture of coordination. And so I can't think of recurrence of constants as being the fundamental fact about the formal language that's interesting. Rather, I need to think in this more relational way about the requirements that are imposed on any interpretation of this language. We'll see later on that when we start modeling an intransitive coordination relation, we do that in much the same way. But again, it can't just be recurrence of a constant, because that would just impose transitivity on what we're trying to do. Okay. So, like I said, I want to think about the traditional account in a way that sort of reveals where transitivity is coming from. And thinking of coordination as a guarantee of coreference gets us transitivity pretty directly, making some relatively minimal assumptions about what guarantees are like. Because if you just think about it, if I guarantee you that X and Y co-refer, and I guarantee you that Y and Z co-refer, then I have thereby guaranteed you that X and Z co-refer. Right, so it just falls out of thinking of coordination as the guarantee of coreference that it's a transitive relation. Right, not thinking of recurrence of anything. Right, this doesn't mention recurrence. Right, we've got transitivity located in this, what I take to be a deeper place. Okay, so that is my way of thinking about the traditional account, and we'll come back to my way of modifying it slightly to get an intransitive account. Before I do that, I want to talk about the slow switching cases, and again try to bring out how the assumption that coordination is transitive has shaped the possible responses. Okay, so before we get to switched Peter, I'm sure you all know the example of Peter being, unbeknownst to him, transported from Earth to Twin Earth. Before we get to switched Peter, let's talk about Peter's boring unswitched qualitative duplicate. So we'll call him unswitched Peter. So at T1, unswitched Peter encounters Pavarotti swimming in a lake in New Zealand and forms a vivid memory of it. At T2, he attends a performance of Pavarotti's in Perth, still on Earth, right, all on Earth, and forms a vivid memory of that. And then at T3, he draws on these memories and does some explicit reasoning that he might represent, to himself like this: Pavarotti swam in Lake Taupo, Pavarotti performed in Perth, therefore someone who swam in Lake Taupo performed in Perth. Okay, a boring case. And here are some things that we might like to say about it. Just to insist that these are claims about Peter at T3, right? There's diachronic questions you can ask about Peter's attitudes. I'd like to avoid talking about those if I can. Right, so these are judgments, intuitive things to say about Peter at T3. So at that point, he has veridical memories. The premises of his explicit reasoning derive their warrant from those veridical memories. The reasoning is logically impeccable, and he arrives at a true conclusion. Hopefully that's all not very controversial, right? That's a boring case. Okay, as you probably all know, a lot of the discussion of almost all the discussion of the challenge here turns on disagreements about how to assign concepts to Peter's various attitudes, or senses to Peter's various attitudes. I obviously don't want to talk that way, because I don't want to talk in terms that this sort of simply imposes transitivity in this reflexive way. So instead, I'm going to just talk about the coordination relations on Peter's attitudes that seem to be implied by these judgments. Now, it's going to turn out that in this case, they are transitive. So that, we can, if you want to, talk in terms of concepts. But the fundamental thing from my perspective is just the coordination relations that are presupposed by these facts about unswitched Peter. Okay, so I'm going to describe them quickly. So think of the green boxes as the memories, and this sort of salmon-y thing as the explicit reasoning. Okay, so we should say that when we say the premises of the reasoning are warranted by the relation to the memories, so it had better be that sort of the relationship, the representation of Pavarotti in
the first premise is coordinated with the representation of Pavarotti in one of the memories, right? That had better be coordination, right? And so we're just modeling that, and for now, traditionally, just looks very boring, right? It's just kind of reiteration. Nothing, in a sense, if you wanted to think of it as the premise just inherits the content of the memory, you could do that in this case, because we have mutual entailment. Right. Similarly, for the other premise and the other memory, right? If that premise is warranted by its relation to the memory, then its representation of Pavarotti had better be coordinated with the representation of Pavarotti in the memory. And again, we can model that in this very boring way. And we're saying that the reasoning is intuitively valid, so it had better be that two representations of Pavarotti in the reasoning are coordinated with each other. And that's what we represent down here, and that everything looks great, or we're modeling it with a valid inference. So again, this is all perfectly classical. We could, there's no violations of transitivity here. All right. So we can describe Peter in a perfectly classical way, but I'm just focusing on the coordination relations that are presupposed by the things that I said about it. Okay. Again, I just want to remind us, these are all synchronic facts about Peter at T3. That's the claim. Okay, so now we get to the famous case from Boghossian, the discussion of switched Peter. He's just like unswitched Peter, except between T1 and T2, unbeknownst to him, he's transported to Twin Earth. So the first memory is formed on the basis of an encounter with Pavarotti on Earth. The second memory is formed on the basis of an encounter with Twin Pavarotti in Twin Perth, on Twin Earth. And so the inference that he performs at T3 draws on information from distinct people, some information from Pavarotti and some information from Twin Pavarotti. Let's also just suppose that in Switch Peter's world, not only has Pavarotti never done both things, but nobody's done both things. Nobody's swam in Lake Taupo and performed in Perth. So let's ask the externalist question, we're assuming that Switch Peter's a qualitative duplicate of unswitched Peter. What representational facts about his attitudes are shared? So we've already decided that the conclusion he comes to is false, right? So that's not that exciting, right? We've already established that. So that's clearly a difference between Peter and Switch Peter. Unswitched Peter and Switch Peter. And so the question we should ask then is, are there any of the other things, do we need to reject any of the other things, or can we hold on to all those other descriptions of what unswitched Peter was doing? And the thing I want to try to draw out, first of all, is that this depends on whether coordination is transitive. So my claim is that if coordination is transitive, we have to give up at least one more of these things. If it's intransitive, we actually don't. That's sort of like, in some sense, the most interesting, or anyway, the interesting fact about thinking in terms of transitivity. So why is it that if coordination is transitive, we have to give up one more of these things? Well, if the memories are veridical, if Switch Peter's memories are veridical, then they're about different people. Right? They're formed on the basis of encounters with different people. So if Switch Peter's memories are veridical, then they're about different people. If the premises of the reasoning of his reasoning are warranted by their respective memories, then they must be coordinated with their respective memories. If the reasoning is faultless, then the premises must be coordinated with each other. So if coordination is transitive, then the memories must be coordinated with each other. But the memories have just disjoint reference. And so by the traditional account of coordination, they cannot be coordinated with each other. Because one's about Pavarotti and one's about Jim Pavarotti. All right. So if coordination is transitive, we have to give up one more of these things. And if you look at the literature, you'll see different people actually giving up different claims here. Right? It's not like there's some consensus about which thing we should give up. I'm just going to quickly talk through the literature. I'm not going to argue against any of these alternative positions. I actually think several of them are perfectly reasonable. I'm just interested in showing you what it looks like from a different perspective. So then very quickly, right, so if you know the literature, Tai rejects the idea that the memories are veridical at T3. Right? Tai thinks that the memory content shifts eventually, just like the attitude content shifts. So one of the memories is now non-veridical. So that's the one response. Burge holds, Well, he doesn't actually say this, but Burge says things that I think entail that the premises of the reasoning cannot inherit their warrant from the memories. Right? If you know Burge's work here, what Burge says is that Swish Peter has two Pavarotti concepts, and only one of them is involved in the reasoning. Right? So the other one, you know, involved in the memory is such that at least one of the premises is not coordinated with the memory on which it's based. Was that too quick? No. Right. So Burge doesn't say this, but because Burge says there's two concepts, right, at least only one of them can be such that it's coordinated with its respective memory, right? If the reasoning is faultless, and so there's coordination across the premises of the reasoning. And Francois, also a little bit harder to pin down, at least from my perspective. There's a way in which actually my view, the view I developed is sort of an interpretation of some things that Francois says, but the main thing that Francois wants to say, I think, is that the reasoning is faultless and it employs a vacuous concept, a mental file that has no referent, right? And so that's the crucial part of his view. And so I think it follows that he must reject it. Given the traditional account of coordination, he must reject must discard one of the first two claims here, right? Because if the memories also fail of reference, right, it's not just that the attitudes involved in the reasoning fail of reference, but the memories fail of reference, then they're not veridical, right? And so that's one possibility. If the memories don't fail of reference, then they refer, and the premises of the reasoning do, and according to the traditional account of coordination, they can't be coordinated because one refers and the other fails to refer. Right. So either way, right, I think Francois has to give up one of these two descriptions. Campbell, as I read him, rejects the idea that reasoning is logically faultless. I mean, Campbell, I'm not sure he discusses this case in particular, but what he says about structurally similar cases suggests that he would have to deny that the reasoning here is logically faultless. Campbell's an externalist about coordination, which is to say that he thinks qualitative duplicates don't have an isomorphic coordination structure. So in a sense, the way Campbell describes that is to say that ultimately we cannot draw a deep distinction between logical mistakes and empirical mistakes, right? And in some sense in which Peter is making a logical mistake, even though he's just lost track of objects, right? That's the sense in which Campbell is an externalist about coordination, right? So he's going to say that the reasoning here is logically faulty, even though it can't be corrected otherwise than by empirical investigation. And then finally, I mean, the way I read Boghossian sort of just looks at these options and say, look, none of these seem like very principled responses to the situation, and so we ought to just reject the presupposition that's sort of shaping, or a presupposition that's shaping them, which is that sort of externalistically determined notion of content plays a role in rationalizing explanation. Right. All people are sharing that idea, and give you no plausible response here. We should just give up on the idea that externalistically characterized content plays an essential role in rationalizing explanation. Okay. And again, so my goal is to show that this looks different if coordination is transitive or intransitive. So looking ahead, I mean, I'm going to come back to this, but think about how we could describe the coordination structure here if coordination were intransitive, right? We could say that the premises are coordinated with their respective memories, and so they're warranted by those memories. And the premises are coordinated with each other, and so the reasoning is faultless. But we could also say that the memories are not coordinated with each other, because if coordination is intransitive, that's a perfectly legitimate coordination structure. Again, no way to describe it in terms of a distribution of concepts, but you know, that's what we're going to end up with if we think coordination is an intransitive relation or potentially intransitive relation. Okay, so I'm going to come back to this after I give you an account of what intransitive coordination might look like. Okay, so I'm going to give you a story about intransitive coordination. So recall, my goal of characterizing the traditional account in this sort of abstract way was to locate a sort of parameter that can be tweaked to make it intransitive. And so here's the the way I characterize the traditional account, X and Y are coordinated if and only if it's a semantic requirement that X and Y co-refer. This is essentially Fine's idea. Think of it as a schema, right, where we just drop out that particular semantic relation that we think coordination is the requirement of, and think about replacing it with slightly different relations. And there are a number of different ways you could do this, and several of them generate intransitive relations, right? So I've been exploring different ones, but I'm gonna focus on the one that I take to be the most plausible, which is that coordination is the requirement of non-disjoint reference. Okay, so what do I mean by disjoint reference? Well, that's the technical term, but disjoint reference. X and Y have disjoint reference if they both refer and they refer to different things. That's what I mean by disjoint reference. So if X doesn't refer, then X and Y don't have disjoint reference, no matter what Y refers to. Right. So disjoint reference is being referring and referring to different things. Right. So not having, so that's a different relation than coreference. So the requirement of non-disjoint reference is a distinct requirement from the requirement of co-reference. Okay. And just very quickly note that this little tweak then now no longer imposes transitivity on coordination. Again, given the same assumptions about what guarantees are like or what requirements are like, it no longer follows that if I guarantee you that X and Y have non-disjoint reference, and I guarantee you that Y and Z have non-disjoint reference, I've not thereby guaranteed you that X and Z have non-disjoint reference. Right? Because if Y fails to refer, then X and Y satisfy the requirement sort of trivially. Y and Z satisfy it trivially, no matter what X and Z refer to. So X and Z can have disjoint reference. Right? So this little tweak on going from co-reference to non-disjoint reference now makes no longer imposes transitivity on coordination. And I'll just say, I cite Helping Us and Francois here. People have noticed this, something very close to this, often in the context of talking about de jure coreference. And so I'm drawing on that work. The thing that I want to insist on is that doing this is really not getting very far towards understanding intransitive coordination, because it's not yet seeing how whatever this is could induce rational relations between representations. And that's what's fundamental about what coordination is for me, is it's a thing, a relation between attitudes that induces relations of incompatibility and support between them. And so in Fine's book, he sort of floats the idea that coordination is intransitive in certain contexts, not actually in the context that I'm talking about. And then he says this: the failure of transitivity of coordination has some radical implications for the conception of logical validity. The very idea of validity in virtue of logical form, as this is normally conceived, may also break down. Okay, so this comes up on the second to last page of the last chapter of the book. So he doesn't say anything more about this, right? It seems like kind of a big worry, and that he just drops it, right? The book ends. And so I think this is the most fundamental challenge to trying to develop an intransitive account of coordination. It's just not at all obvious that any intransitive account could have the kind of rational status that we take coordination to have. I think that's the worry that Fine is expressing here. So I think it's the deepest challenge for developing an account of intransitive coordination is trying to answer this challenge. And I'll just say that, I'm ambivalent about whether or not I've ever succeeded in doing it, but most of the time I kind of think I have, but you'll see that there are some weird aspects to it. So the goal then to respond to this challenge is then to develop a formal system to model truth preservation in virtue of the semantic requirement of non-disjoint reference. That's a big mouthful. But one way to think about it is just develop a formal system that stands to the requirement of non-disjoint reference as classical first order logic stands to the requirement of co-reference. Right? Some system that we can understand as explicating truth preservation in virtue of this kind of requirement. And so that's why I went into the weird details about how to think in a more relational way about what's going on in first order logic, because I'm going to do the very same thing, but now for this slightly different kind of requirement.
Okay. Now, before I actually talk about, a little bit about our system, I'm going to mention one constraint on doing this that I think we should obey. So even if we accept that coordination is intransitive, I don't think we should think that it's anti-transitive, which is to say, we shouldn't think that there are no domains over which it's de facto transitive, right? Do you understand the difference? Intransitive means not necessarily transitive. Anti-transitive means always not transitive, right? I don't think there's any reason to think coordination is anti-transitive, which is to say that there are definitely representational systems. When you zoom in on them, coordination is actually distributed transitively over them. Right, it'd be weird to reject that. It'd be super weird to reject that. Weirder than anything I want to do today. And it would also be weird to think that we've always been wrong about logical relations over domains in which coordination is transitive. Right. So that means if we accept those two things, then we should try to recover the traditional account of coordination as a special case of our new account of coordination. Right. We should take it as a constraint on what we're doing. That even if we have domains over which coordination is non-transitive, if we zoom in on parts of them over which coordination is de facto transitive, we should posit rational relations there that match the traditional ones. All right. So our logic should be conservative with respect to the traditional classical logic, essentially. Now, that's a kind of, I take it pretty hard to avoid as a kind of desideratum here, but one thing that's kind of interesting is that that by itself means that we have to work in a logic that is very unusual. Why is that? Well, it means to satisfy conservativeness, if coordination is intransitive, we would have to model it with an intransitive consequence relation. All right, so now I'm distinguishing two things. There's intransitive coordination and an intransitive consequence relation. And my claim is to model intransitive coordination in a way that satisfies conservativeness, we would have to use an intransitive consequence relation. Okay, why is that? That's the claim. Okay, so just think of this as a small, you know, a very small representational system. It's got three representations. And imagine the coordination facts are like this. You know, alpha is coordinated with beta, beta is coordinated with gamma, but alpha is not coordinated with gamma. So we have an intransitive structure over this very small system. To satisfy conservativeness, what we need to do is posit rational relations that match the traditional ones on any transitive substructure here. And that's what a conservativeness is. On any transitive substructure, we posit rational relations that match the traditional ones. So here is a transitive substructure, right? Coordination is transitive over this pair. So we want to treat that classically. But classically, that just looks like this, right? Nothing very interesting. Right? You have coordination in this situation. That's just this. That's the only way to represent it classically. So we need to respect that verdict. The second two are a transitive substructure, so we want to treat them the same way, right? We treat them classically, so there better be mutual entailment there. And now focus on the first and the third. That's also a transitive substructure of this structure, right? We just have two things that aren't coordinated, right? So it's also a transitive structure. So we want to look at what that looks like classically. Classically, that just looks like this, right? Distinct constants. So there really better be non-entailment there. So given those decisions we just made that were forced on us by being conservative, right, this is what we ended up with. We have to satisfy these entailment relations. And note that this is now has to be an intransitive entailment relation. Because f of alpha entails f of beta entails f of gamma, but f of alpha doesn't entail f of gamma. So that's now pushing us towards a logic that is sort of very different from classical logic in the sense that transitivity doesn't hold for the consequence relation. Okay. So I've spent a fair amount of time, I'm not really a logician, actually I'm not at all a logician, but I spent a bunch of time thinking about whether or not any system like this is plausible, and there are different ones that strike me as pretty good actually. I'm going to talk through a sort of simple one that's easier just to bring out the kind of the way it works. And so, remember, in classical logic, the relation that we're modeling, we're using to model coordination is recurrence of the same constant. That's the thing we're using to model coordination if we're working classically. But that imposes transitivity on coordination, so we don't want that. So we're going to use a different syntactic relation to model coordination. And so what that's going to be in this case is we're going to allow our constants to come in an order. So we have A1, A2, A3, B1, B2, B3, etc. And the syntactic relation in the language that models coordination is going to be being an occurrence of a consecutive constant. So A1 and A2 are going to model a coordinated pair of representations, A2 and A3 are going to model a coordinated pair of representations, and A1 and A3 are not going to model a coordinated pair of representations. That's the way that language is going to work, and we can do something very simple, which is like we did classically, where we modeled coordination by enforcing certain patterns of coreference relative to every interpretation. Right? That was the fact about the classical system. Right? Two occurrences of the same constant co-refer in every interpretation of the language. We can just do something very much like that, but here. So what we say is that on every interpretation of this language, A1 and A2 never have disjoint reference. One can fail to refer, and the other refers, but they can never have disjoint reference. And every acceptable interpretation of the language, A2 and A3 can never have disjoint reference. But there are some interpretations of the language on which A1 and A3 have disjoint reference. So that those are the imposition of constraints on the assignment relations in this formal language. And that gets us a relation that models the requirement of non-disjoint reference. So that's this. So that's one feature of the language. Occurrences of consecutive constants cannot have disjoint reference. Occurrences of non-consecutive constants can have disjoint reference. So that's how the system works. Okay. Then there's the matter of the entailment relation. So I'll just say, essentially working in a free logic, right, because some of these constants can fail to refer in some interpretations, so we're going to be working in a three-valued logic, and there's a very natural consequence relation in three-valued logic which works really well for this and is potentially a non-transitive as a consequence relation. It's sometimes called Strawson entailment. So simply put, a set of premises gamma entails a sentence, Strawson entails a sentence S, if and only if no interpretation makes all of gamma true and S false. It sounds very classical, right? But if you're working in a three-valued context, this can be an intransitive consequence relation. The way to think about this is the truth of the premises guarantees the non-falsehood of the conclusion. Right. And because of the structure of that definition, in a multi-valued logic, this can be, depending on how you just define the language, this can be an intransitive consequence relation. You set everything up right, the system then is provably such that it satisfies this thing I call conservativeness. Right? So FA1 entails FA2. Why is that? Well, there's no interpretation on which A1 and A2 are assigned to distinct objects. There are interpretations on which A2 doesn't refer and A1 does refer. That would be interpretation on which FA1 is true and FA2 is neither true nor false. But that's not a counterexample to an entailment pattern in this consequence relation, right? So there's no way of going from true to false between FA1 and FA2. Similarly for FA2 and FA3, vice versa, but there are interpretations that assign A1 and A3 to distinct elements in the domain, and so you can go from true to false by going from FA1 to FA3. So there's mutual lack of entailment there, right? So you get the intransitivity of the consequence that we wanted. And just in general, like it satisfies conservativeness, so you have all the classical patterns that you want. So for example, FA1 and if FA2 then P entails P, right? So we get like modus ponens without any formal identity between the, you know, unembedded, the antecedent and the unembedded sentence. Okay, a lot more to say about that, and you might be upset about this consequence relation. I'm very happy to chat about that, lots of interesting things. But I'm gonna say, quickly, what this means if we take it seriously and apply it to the null switching case. So recall, this was the intransitive structure we wanted to use to characterize Switch Peter's attitudes in a way that allowed us to hold on to all of the things we wanted to say about unswitch Peter except the idea that the conclusion is true. Right? This intransitive pattern allows us to do that. So if we apply what we've just done in modeling rational relations, So the way we're thinking about this intuitively is that, right, there's this requirement of non-disjoint reference that holds between the memory and one of the premises. Right? That premise, the idea is, it can't refer to anything other than what its source memory refers to. And the other premise can't refer to anything other than what its source memory refers to. And the two premises are coordinated, so they can't refer to anything other than what the other one refers to. But that structure of requirements is consistent with the idea that the memories can refer to distinct things. Right, so that's the application of this, intuitively application of this picture of coordination to this case. Okay, so then the rational relations look like this. Right, so the representation of Pavarotti in we're going to model the representation of Pavarotti in one of the memories with the constant A1, the representation of Pavarotti in the other memory with the constant A3, and the representation of Pavarotti in the inferences of the constant A2, which is the one that sits between them, is coordinated with each, but they're not coordinated with each other. So the reasoning, right, is the kind of amalgam of the memory states. And so what we get when we look at the rational relations here is that the premises mutually entail the representations in memory mutually entail the relevant premises, right? Because there's coordination between the representations of Pavarotti there. All right, that's just applying what the formal language we just built. And the reasoning is perfectly valid, right? That's an entailment in our system. It can never go from true to false. But if we look at the endpoints, right, if we look at the relationship between the memories and the final conclusion, there is a lack of entailment there. Right, that's just applying our system, the intransitivity of our system to this case. Okay, so what sense can be made of this? Is this just a kind of weird formal description of what's going on here, or is this potentially revealing something about the rational situation? Well, here's the way I'm inclined to think about it. Given the intransitivity of coordination, there are two perspectives we can take on Switch-Peters' situation. There is what I want to call the stepwise perspective, from which we evaluate each of the cognitive transitions that he makes. And from that perspective, he's behaving perfectly rationally, right? Captured by these entailments here. But then because coordination is intransitive, there's another perspective we can take. I'm going to call it the global perspective, from which we just look at the endpoints of his whole cognitive adventure. And we note that there's a lack of support, ultimately, from the place he started and the place he finished. And that captures the idea that although Peter's individual cognitive acts are perfectly responsible, they take place in an infelicitous epistemic environment, and so they're ultimately, in some sense, faulty. And so what's characteristic on this way of thinking about intransitive coordination is that these two perspectives diverge. Right? If you have transitive coordination, then stepwise responsible cognitive behavior is always going to be globally responsive cognitive behavior. But if you have intransitive coordination structure, then it's possible for stepwise responsible cognitive behavior to not be globally responsible cognitive behavior. That's the idea. Okay, so let's quickly then go back to compare this to other responses in the literature. Right, everybody has to admit that something's gone wrong, right? Switch Peters arrived at a false conclusion, right? So we have to admit that something's gone wrong. There was some awkwardness in deciding exactly at which point in his cognitive life he went wrong. You could see that awkwardness in the fact that different people went different ways here, right? It wasn't just obvious which thing to blame. Right? If coordination is intransitive, we don't have to lay the blame at any individual transition here. Right? You could say each transition is perfectly rational, it's just they don't fit together in Peter's environment in the right way. Right, that's a position that becomes open to us if we say the coordination is intransitive. So, you know, the memory by themselves are perfectly veridical. Drawing on them in an inference in the way that Peter does is a perfectly good thing to do. Reasoning he does is perfectly faulty. It's just that he's in a situation where those three things don't fit together correctly. Okay, so I think then this occupies a novel position. This is what I just said. Occupies a novel position in the literature, as far as I can tell. So here's Boghossian expressing the challenge, or one way to express the challenge. He says, there could be no difference in respect of rationality between unswitched Peter and switched Peter. It seems implausible in the extreme to say that they differ in their capacity to reason. Now, if coordination is intransitive, then there is an ambiguity in what's being claimed here. Right? If we interpret this as the insistence that Peter's cognitive transition, so that the two Peter's cognitive transitions have the same status, then we can agree. right? There's no difference in any particular transition between the cognitive the rational status of any transition. But if we interpret this as the insistence that there are no structural rational evaluations that distinguish the two Peters, then we can disagree, right? Because we're in the situation now where there are these global facts that aren't fixed by the stepwise facts. Okay, so very briefly, that's the view. I'll just mention a few features of it that may not have been totally obvious, just to relate it to other things. So I want to reiterate that it's conservative with respect to the traditional account, right? So it allows that there are domains over which coordination is transitive, and relative to those domains, it says the exact same thing, right? So about unswitched Peter, right? Unswitched Peter's attitudes are perfectly transitive. And I'm saying nothing different about his cognitive, his rational situation, right? Over domains in which that's what I just said, right? So it differs from the traditional account only in allowing more possible coordination structures than the traditional account allows. The other thing is, I would mention, it is a kind of externalism about coordination. It's not Campbell's externalism about coordination, but it is a kind of externalism about coordination. How so? Well, I'm allowing that qualitative duplicates are not coordinatively isomorphic, right? So unswitched Peter and Peter have different coordination structures on their attitudes. One's transitive and the other is intransitive, right? So I am externalist about coordination. But qualitative duplicates on this view do share what you could think of as a skeletal coordination structure, which is a coordination structure that characterizes what's going on in each cognitive transition. And then the difference between agents that are kind of epistemically well-situated and agents that are epistemically unlucky is that the epistemically well-situated agents, their coordination structure is the transitive closure of the coordination structure of their unlucky counterparts, right? So this idea is like what it is to be in a good situation is for your individual coordination relations to then sum to a structure that you can then describe in terms of concepts if you want, right? Because it has a transitive structure, but it breaks down in a particular case, particular kinds of cases, when you're epistemically unlucky, you have the skeletal coordination structure that's not doesn't have this sort of nice rounded transitive structure. Okay, that's it, I think. Yes.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.